Welcome to life on Earth. Welcome to life on Earth. Welcome to life on Earth.
Well, hello, you good people, and welcome to Life on Earth with Robert and Amy Naser. Amy Naser, thank you for joining Life on Earth.
You're very much welcome, Robert Naser.
You are my hero, or is that heroine? I'm seeing it both. It's kind of like we call, what was the one I was looking for? Is it hosts and hostesses, waiters and waitresses, stewards and stewardesses? the idea of a heroine is going away. We just call women heroes. Oh, actor. That's what I was thinking.
Right.
We don't talk about actresses anymore. Female actors are actors.
I'm okay with actress.
I don't know. I like gendering.
You know, I come from a background of studying French, and you cannot get away from gendering in French.
Yeah. Same thing with, I studied Spanish in the same way, and I like it. I'm good with it. It makes sense to me, but that's not what I wanted to talk about. I want to talk about crime and criminals and sort of the opposite of that, but really I'm going to start in the opposite track.
Oh, we're going to go into crime?
We're going to go into crime. We are going into crime together. See, a few episodes back on the reality show, the crew, we discussed crime in L.A., Los Angeles, which, you know, is total crazy with crime. And crime on High Street, the U.K. Crime is normalized. It's getting to where people figure they can just walk into a CVS, walk out with whatever they need. They're not likely to be caught. And even if they're caught, they're not likely to be arrested. You know, during the Antifa riots, during the BLM riots, via these security, and everybody has cell phone cameras, and just plain ordinary days, you can see criminals and thugs and ne'er-do-wells, slackers, walking into fine shops and grabbing clothes and candy bars and electronics and appliances and just walking out. And the two questions we asked are, is this new? And either way, well, what's the solution? And the first thing I thought of when this topic was last raised was the glorification of criminals in fiction, in film, in pop culture. Think of rap music. Well, you don't even have to think of rap music. Think of films, you know, Bonnie and Clyde, or the Corleones and the Godfather.
Yeah, the film noir types
film
of movies.
Film noir, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, fun movies like that. You know, the Ocean's 11 gang, or Ocean's 8 was the last one I saw. Sandra Bullock, that was fun.
That's right.
It would glamorize crime in books, on television, in movies, you know, gangster movies, film noir, as you say, heist films, contemporary comedic anti-heroes. You know, rock and roll and country ballads, you know, Life in the Fast Lane, Take the Money and Run. It's all good fun. And it goes back to, you know, ancient mysticism, the Christian self-doubt and abnegation and altruism and original sin, and right up through modern philosophy, subjectivism and collectivism and impotence, and the admiration for the criminal. You know, it's a response to the philosophic assault on reason, certainty, self-interest, mm-hmm. self-assertion, production, productiveness, property, success, pride. So what was the solution? Well, the solution is a philosophy of reason. And consequently, a culture of reason and virtue and pride, respect for the value of other good people, and above all, self-esteem, you know, the real self-esteem, not the fake stuff they give you in grade school, which flows from a self-confident man's enthusiastic embrace of facts and values. See, the reason that decent people, most people, don't steal stuff is because it's wrong. It's morally wrong. And consequently, two things flow from that wrongness. And the obvious factor is guilt and fear. You know, people feel guilty when they do the wrong stuff, and the fear of the consequences. But not just getting caught, the shame, the loss of opportunities once you're found out, the embarrassment, all the bad emotions. But the second factor, and now we get into the topic for the day, the second factor, which is primary, even though we're not taught to focus on it, we have too much pride to steal. We are proud of our moral stature. We're proud of our respect for property and individual rights. We are proud to be someone that good people should value respect, admire. We are good. We want the good life in a good world. And we want to see that in others. You know, by virtue of the nature of art, we need to see that in others to affirm our sense of life, our sense that we live in a world where we can succeed through rational and virtuous action. We need reminders that whatever else might be wrong in the world, good people are out there, keeping the gears turning, the wheels of the world spinning, producing the values that we all need to live. And not just abstract values. Business and enterprises, corporations, conglomerates, and concretely, food and clothing, shelter and safety, machines and devices, appliances and electronics, arts and entertainment and sports and music and more. We need to see the producers, the creators. And because not everybody is virtuous, because there are slackers and ne'er-do-wells and criminals and psychopaths and politicians, but then I repeat myself, we need to see the extremes of good, which compensate for all of that, which balance the scales and make the world the magnificent place it is. And consequently, we need heroes. And my point today is we need heroes in a way that requires real virtue, real achievement, real courage. But that doesn't require consistency or perfection. So if a hero of yours is mixed, and this is where I want to start hearing from you in the chat, who's your hero? And are they mixed? Are you having to be selective in the ways in which you regard their heroism? That can be hard on the soul if you can't handle complexity or nuance. But if you're watching us, you can. I trust you on this. I trust your ability in this regard.
Can we get into examples?
I absolutely want examples. So I can't read the chat on my little screen here. I got to bring it up on the big one here. But maybe, Amy, you can start us off.
Oh, with heroes. So yes. A mixed hero.
A mixed hero, yes.
Well, I have a few examples.
Good.
Let me do kind of the obvious one, who is near and dear to my heart. It's Henry Ford.
Henry Ford. I have him on my list here.
Yeah, he made an oopsie, I should say this. He made a major, horrible mistake of being anti-Semitic. Whoops.
Yeah. And it's interesting because the way in which he was anti-Semitic was he was suspicious of the stereotypical Jewish bankers. He had friends who were Jewish.
Well, he also had enemies who were Christian investors.
Yes.
And he didn't like investors. He didn't like bankers. And actually, you see this kind of, first of all, let's just talk about today, because I'm seeing, actually, I had to unfriend somebody recently.
Over their criticism of Henry Ford?
No, over their anti-Semitism or their... Well, it wasn't quite anti-Semitism, but it was bordering on it. And it was one of these situations where...
Ain't nobody got time for that.
So it was one of these situations where you've got, it was a cartoon this person shared of a banker just kind of like, I don't know, doing some vulgar thing or whatever. And, portraying the banker in a really bad light. The idea that, anybody who is involved in the financial industry, whether that's angel investors or, just regular being, a regional manager at a bank, I guess, to somebody who is, runs a hedge fund or whatever, that somehow these people are not actually engaging in production. This is Henry Ford's main complaint about investors and bankers and all of that, was he didn't feel that they were actually inventing anything or producing anything or applying their minds to anything good, which is actually false.
Oh, he should have had a good talk with Yaron Brook.
That's absolutely right.
Who, unfortunately, he missed him by about 80 years, but
yes,
the productive value of finance.
But a lot of these people don't understand that, yeah, there is a productive value of finance. There's also a risk that these people take. And then there's actually quite a lot of creativity that goes into an innovation that goes into the, you know, running a hedge fund, for gosh sakes. It's not easy.
No.
Otherwise everybody would do it.
Yes.
But yeah, so that was Henry. I mean, I've read extensively about Henry Ford's life, what his beliefs were. There's a really excellent, I mean, I should say it's a good book. I would say it's a little bit mixed as well, but it's a fairly decent book about Henry Ford's life called The People's Tycoon. And so Henry Ford, he ran a newspaper called the Dearborn Independent. And he ended up allowing Nazi sympathizers who were in contact with the Nazi party, who were supportive of the Nazi party in Germany, to run this newspaper of his. And Henry Ford, just so you know a little bit of background, eighth grade education, terrible speller. He really didn't have a lot going for him intellectually. He tried. I mean, he ended up dabbling in all sorts of interesting things. You know, a lot of people did at the time in the 20s, in the 1920s, you know, transcendentalism and, you know, all sorts of, you know, he was an innovator. He was trying to try things out. And, but some of these concepts, along with Charles Lindbergh, who was also anti-Semitic and a hero, you know, they dabbled in these ideas that were really over their heads. They were not able to rationally untangle these concepts and these ideas and how they related to reality and how they hurt and murdered people.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting comparison what happened to Lindbergh, who Ayn Rand analyzed in her lecture and her essay, Apollo and Dionysus. Mm-hmm. And Henry Ford, obviously, I don't think went the way that Lindbergh did, became a bitter and angry mystic. A couple super chats real quick, part of which weighs in on what you're talking about. Wes Stewart, thank you very much for your support. Very generous support and says, hi, I can't watch live, but I am looking forward to watching later. Thank you for that. Very much appreciate it. And Buster Jones is in and says, I can't decide which was more intellectually damaging for Ford, his Jew hating or his willingness to supply Stalin. Now, that's interesting because both that and his failure to understand the evil of what was going on in Nazism in Germany. It's interesting having, you know, Amy and I, we just saw the film Oppenheimer a week ago. Mm-hmm. And to see in context, before people fully understood what was going on in communist Russia, what was going on in Nazi Germany, you had Oppenheimer thinking, well, what we need to do now that we have this nuclear technology, and he was seeing it as the combination of nuclear power, nuclear energy, and the destructive force of nuclear weapons. The only way to control all of this is to give it to everybody. He even thought that not him personally, but the United States government would need to share this information with the Soviets. Obviously, I think that he was wrong about that. But in its context, you can see how he thought, oh, well, we don't want war. So what we want then is to spread the technology. So everybody's got it, and therefore nobody will use the destructive parts and we'll all have access to the good. Again, in 2023, that sounds so absurd, but I can see why Ford, for example, would think, well, you know, supplying Stalin with goods, particularly during the war effort, wasn't going to be a bad thing because that's how we're going to win the war. And after the war, we'll have peace and we can, you know, hands across the water and come to terms. And yeah. But that said, I got to agree with Buster Jones that neither one of those did him any favors. You know, we can say context, but still a lot of people did know better at the time.
So one other point about Henry Ford, because this is important. Henry Ford was a pacifist. He was an avowed pacifist. he actually put together a contingent of thought leaders, as they were, to basically sail across the Atlantic on a boat, on a peace ship, to try to stop World War One right. from happening. That was not successful.
Somebody who sees war through that lens.
Yeah.
Imagine how somebody like that would say, well, look, we got to talk to Hitler until we just get him to see the truth.
So, but I let me just say that there were a lot of people back then, in the 30s, especially, who considered, you know, Stalin, Mussolini, and Hitler as innovators. As innovators of government, of innovators of a new society, of a new world. And unfortunately, it was extremely confusing for a lot of people, not to make excuses for anybody, but it was. And so during this time with the Dearborn Independent, they actually published International Jew, The World's Problem. It was basically a pamphlet that his editors wrote. First of all, Henry Ford, again, he was not intellectually motivated in that way or able to write something like that. However, he did sign off on it. Now, why would he do this? He said at the time, so Henry Ford was self-proclaimed pacifist who opposed World War I, believed that Jews were responsible for starting wars in order to profit from them. You know, that's still an alive idea.
I was going to say, everything that you're saying about Ford, it sounds anachronistic. You know, it's 2023. Obviously, nobody thinks that way anymore.
Oh, yeah, they do.
And yet they do. Listen to the voices about Russia right now in the war in Ukraine. The better of the worst are saying, well, we shouldn't get involved because it's not our war. And under their breath, you can hear them saying, well, I'm actually pro-Russia because the Ukraine are a bunch of crazies. They're, you know, the Russia is anti-left and I'm anti-left. The Russia is anti-woke and I'm anti-woke. And then they make their excuses that, well, the Ukraine isn't that much better than Russia. And they've got their Nazis too. And it's an amazing thing. And then the same thing in the Middle East. The problem in the Middle East isn't the enemies of Israel. It's just, if Israel wasn't there, then, you know, there just wouldn't be any problems.
Yeah. So you've got this, this idea that's still out there. And in the back, going back to the biography, A People's Tycoon of Henry Ford, it was, at least to some extent, it was documented that there was a friend of Henry Ford in his very elder years, maybe like a year before he died. I think he died in 1947. So he was able to basically live through World War II. You know, and by the way, eventually he did actually support the war effort in World War II. You know, he created all, you know, airplanes and trucks and all of this stuff for the war effort. But he didn't realize how bad it was until a friend sat him down and put on some newsreels of the all of the deceased people in the concentration camps. And it was reported that he was absolutely aghast. And, you know, he had a lot of strokes later in his life. And so he wasn't at his best during quite a lot of that time there. But yeah, he fell for a lot of common misconceptions and a lot of hatred and a lot of collectivist thinking with regard to the international Jew. It's funny because he had Jewish friends. His landlord in Detroit, where they resided in a property on Bagley Street, that's where he built the quadricycle, by the way. His landlord was Jewish. And so when he became successful, he would supply his Jewish rabbi landlord a new Model T every year. And at one point, the rabbi had to send him a note saying, stop sending me these, you know, these new cars. I am completely appalled with your ideas about Jewish people and the war and everything. So anyway, so there were consequences that thankfully Henry Ford did see before he died. As we call it, the error of his mistake.
Yes. Now, so, yes. Now, if a hero of yours is mixed, again, that can be hard on your soul to admire somebody like Henry Ford. You know, the great car maker. He revolutionized the auto industry. He changed labor in America in countless beneficial ways. He helped not just industry, but America's war effort. And on top of it all, he created the Edison Institute, now called the Henry Ford, which includes the Henry Ford Museum of American Innovation, the Greenfield Village Historical Museum, the Ford Rouge Factory, auto plant, an auto plant which you can tour, and so much more. He was a complicated man. So when I talk about my respect for him, folks will sometimes bring up the quote-unquote anti-Semitism.
And, you know, but if, oh, go ahead.
You know, further, we can also note he revolutionized the pay and the five-day work week of his employees. I suspect he was the model for Henry Reardon in that regard. Mm-hmm. You know, and Atlas shrugged. For 10 years, Reardon had heard himself denounced throughout the country because his was a company union and because he had never engaged in a violent conflict with the management. This was true. No conflict had ever been necessary. Reardon paid a higher wage scale than any other union scale in the country, for which he demanded and got the best labor force anywhere, unquote. Ayn Rand and Atlas shrugged. Now, at the same time, there were people within Ford's management and to some degree with his knowledge who did engage in strong arm tactics in regard to unions and unionized employees. He was a great man. But, well.
Well, can I just go ahead? I have a couple of
more on Henry Ford.
Yeah, good. Just a couple of good things about Henry Ford. Henry Ford was, well, one more bad thing. He was against the use of alcohol. He was, wow. And to that effect, he was pretty much for prohibition. However, he was absolutely a determined advocate of the women's right to vote. He was an advocate of African-Americans owning their own property and being innovators themselves. He had a lot of friends who, like George Washington Carver and Booker T. Washington and countless many who happened to be Black people, but they were absolute heroes. And he identified that. He identified that they were men of the mind, innovators, and just great men. And, you know, he did a lot that was right. And he did a lot that was right during a time when a lot of people were racist. A lot of people did not want to hire African-American workers. He did, you know, so there's a lot to say about his courage in that regard. There is also a lot to say about his resorting to collectivism with regard to Jewish people. Yeah.
So let me go to another example that overlaps with Henry Ford's life. There was a recent reality show on the birth date of T.E. Lawrence, and we discussed Lawrence of Arabia. You know, great man, extraordinary achievements. And yet it was a very mixed case of divided loyalties, a passionate man faced with some impossible decisions and history defining no-win situations. Now, it can be argued that T.E. Lawrence of Arabia, betrayed Britain during World War I in attempting to liberate the Arabic world from the Turkish Empire and unite the Arabs under the Arabic state, when the official plan was for England and France to divide up the lands won from the Turks. Or, alternately, people say that he betrayed the Arabs who trusted him and fought with him, and he betrayed them to the interest of the Brits. Plans for which he knew, but didn't share with those Arab soldiers who fought the Turks for him. And my point, and my takeaway from the discussion that we had about it, is whether you regard Lawrence of Arabia as a hero or a villain depends on which actions and decisions you regard as fundamental and primary. But even more importantly, However you regard Thomas E. Lawrence, rationality requires that you keep context. So when I say he was a great man, and someone challenges that assessment, I am fully able to acknowledge those arguments that they bring. I have not evaded Lawrence's failings. And again, if I'm rational, I can do that without it impacting my respect for his ability, his heroism, his achievements. I can do that. You can do that. You know, Henry Ford is another case in point. We can acknowledge Henry Ford's shortcomings and still take him as a hero, as somebody we want to be more like, and as somebody where we can say the world is a better place for having had him.
Yes, absolutely.
We can do that. You can do that. And that gets us more closer. I was going to say more closer. That gets us more closer to the central point. And as usual, I'm going to wrap this up with 5 tips. I always give you a few pocket tips to take with you. I hope you enjoy the conversation, but also takeaways. You know, Henry Ford was a great man. And like T.E. Lawrence, like many other leaders and innovators and athletes and entertainers, entertainment, that's a tough one. You know, what do we think of Tom Cruise? What do we think? Well, okay, that's easy, right? What do we think of Roman Polanski? Mm-hmm. Okay, well, you got one on one side, one on the other side. But then we get into, you know, there's folks who, context is everything. Ford was a great man in just the way I want and need to see men in the world. Now, is there a point at which a hero, a figure, say, is so mixed as to really be a villain?
You know, Mussolini.
Mussolini.
Started out being very well liked.
Oh, yeah.
And he even wrote, it was the Saturday Evening Post, I think it was. It was the magazine for which the one amazing painter, the folksy painter. I saw him on like Saturday Evening Post, and it's like, oh, it's a new article by Benito Mussolini.
Oh, Norman Rockwell.
Rockwell. Yeah.
There was a time when people didn't know any better. They didn't know who this guy was. All they saw was a country in trouble and a strong leader rising up.
Yes. Yes.
And you see this over and over again. It's why some people still admire Stalin.
Right.
And not Stalin. I was going to.
Oh, Lenin, you mean?
No, Lenin. Well, yes.
Yes.
Absolutely in their cases. But I was going to say Putin today. Oh. There are people who say that Russia is in such a state that they would be far worse off without the strength. Well, if you think that's an exaggeration, think of a recent politician who in the old days we would have thought didn't really have the stature to be president. But his primary selling point these days, or say in 2016, was, well, yeah, but he fights.
Right.
He fights.
Well,
look at what's happening to this country. And here's a guy who's willing to fight.
That's what they say about the last president.
That's what they have said about many of these world leaders. And then eventually we found out, well, yeah, but their ideas matter too, it turns out. So not getting too much into that, but yeah, is there a point at which a figure is so mixed that our admiration is unjustified? And the answer to that question isn't arbitrary. Oh, I feel like he's just got too much bad. But it is contextual. You know, there are people who will advise you. Here's an old line. See if you've heard this line before. Never meet your heroes. Ugh. I have heard that one so many times, you know, in interviews with famous people or interviews with people who've met famous people. Never meet your heroes.
No, you should meet your heroes. You should.
And the implication is, you know, they'll always let you down. You'll find out their shortcomings. You'll find out the ways in which they didn't meet your expectations, or just that they were human beings and they also got indigestion or headaches or had to use the bathroom. As if.
If you have an anti-reason philosophy, yeah, you're going to look for those flaws. You're going to look for those things that you're not going to like, because that's all you're going to see. But as objectivists, we actually have a framework for what virtues are and how we can define those virtues and how we can actually see those virtues in other people, even if they are mixed. And if our heroes are still alive, we can go up to our heroes and say, this is why I appreciate you.
Yes.
This is why I admire you. And let me tell you why.
Yes.
And talk about, you know, how they thought about, you know, just give them descriptions of what you think their virtues are and how they function. You don't have to say epistemologically, but, you know, how they think on a certain topic. You like their actions. You thought that they had courage, whatever it is, give them the words.
Yes. Absolutely. I love that in the chat here, Buster Jones says, in philosophy, Leonard Peikoff is my hero. Now, according to Andrew Bernstein, think about this. Leonard Peikoff is your hero. According to Andrew Bernstein, a hero is, here, I'll quote his definition, a morally upright individual who, with ability and dauntlessness equal to the task, confronts the obstacles and or dangers arising in pursuit of significant life advancing goals, and who triumphs in at least the moral sense, unquote. Now, you would ask, well, can Leonard Peikoff be a hero? What did he confront? What did he overcome? What were the obstacles? But it's funny, in a recent episode I'm getting to the point where I just lose phrases in my mind. It's crazy. In a recent episode of Keeping It Real with James Valiant, we were reading a quote by Leonard Peikoff about, you know, career and choosing to do the harder or the easier things in life. And Peikoff was saying, Dr. Peikoff was saying, I hate calling good people by just their last name. Leonard Peikoff was saying that lecturing, teaching philosophy was the easiest thing in the world. And the hardest thing, the torture for him, was writing.
Mm.
And he would talk about how if he spent a day writing, the only thing he could think of was, you know, getting to bed, getting to sleep, ending it. And then he would get up the next morning and do it again. So when you consider, if you've, assuming you've read The Ominous Parallels, or if you've read OPAR, Objectivism, the Philosophy of Ayn Rand, or if you've read The Dim Hypothesis, for a man who found writing extraordinarily difficult work, you're right, Buster Jones, the man is a hero for having produced those works, because he was a man who did not find writing easy. Yeah, he said the same thing about doing his podcast. He said if he actually wrote the answers to his podcast, he would produce maybe one every 6 months. And, you know, for a while he was doing them daily and then weekly. And he found that easy, answering off the cuff. I'm kind of the opposite. I tend to script everything.
Mm-hmm.
But yes. Yeah. Leonard Peikoff as a hero? Absolutely. Christopher Smith says he was on a mission from God.
Yeah, I mean, but going back to meeting your heroes,
Don't ever meet your heroes.
I think that it's important to give you a little bit of, like, you need to concretize that these people are not just an abstraction, that they are real. They're in the world. They're flesh and blood. They're somebody you can shake their hands if they'll let you, or give them a hug if they'll let you.
Yeah.
It is absolutely essential that you make it psychologically and philosophically real to yourself. These people do exist.
Yes.
And that you are capable of the things that they have achieved as well. That is why you have heroes, is to inspire yourself, is to give yourself that spiritual fuel to go on, to complete projects, to come up with, you know, create new things, explore new worlds, all of that.
Boom.
Yeah.
And yeah, on our last Sunday show, folks, if you're not watching us on Sundays, 5 Minutes with Robert and Amy Nacer, you will find our show Sunday, 6 p.m. Eastern Time, youtube.com/RobertNacer. You mentioned you actually met John Anderson, the singer.
Oh my gosh. We met John Anderson and I just couldn't keep my eyes off of him. I just, all I could do was just stare at every little cragginess of his face.
Was it disappointing to meet your hero?
Not at all. It was the best.
No, it was so much fun.
And then I got a hug from him. I got a hug and I remember that hug. I remember the position of my arms and his arms. And it was a nice close hug, not too close, but very lovely hug.
Yes.
Just the kind of hug that a hero of mine would give me.
Now, folks, if you're wondering about this, we went to see, this was actually John Anderson with Jean-Luc Ponty when they were touring together. And we had purchased very good seats that included this little meet and greet ahead of time.
Yeah.
But, you know, we were running late enough and they were, his handlers, the guys who were getting him to start the show, were saying, you've got to go, you've got to go. And he stuck around. He didn't leave until he met us. And when he met us, we talked and he didn't have to hug us. He didn't ask. We took photographs together. He did not let them rush him out of the room.
No rushing.
Total sweetheart. Exactly who you'd want him to be. And then he gave an outstanding performance that evening.
Yes.
Speaking of the heroic part.
Yes. And Jean-Luc Ponty was also very nice.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. He was charming. Such a crazy good musician as well.
But I will never forget, you know, how I still have pictures of that and I need to go back and look at it again.
Yes. Don't ever meet your heroes. Oh, no, meet your heroes.
But
part of what I want to say about that, it is the worst advice I can imagine because, it may be surprising, maybe even disappointing to find out your heroes do have some qualities you dislike or disapprove of. But there's an answer to that. And the answer isn't the don't meet your heroes idea. You know, in her essay, The Cult of Moral Grayness, Ayn Rand writes this.
Article.
I'm just going to give you one paragraph. Quote, there are, of course, complex issues in which both sides are right in some respects and wrong in others. And it is here that the package deal of pronouncing both sides gray is least permissible. It is in such issues that the most rigorous precision of moral judgment is required to identify and evaluate the various aspects involved, which can be done only by unscrambling the mixed elements of black and white. Unquote. Now, the reason I mention that is we need to be able to look at our heroes and say, oh my God, he's got this quality I don't approve of. And if I hear somebody criticize him for that, I'm not going to get my hackles raised. I can acknowledge that. And still say, yes, but here is why he's a hero, or here is why he's a hero in my value hierarchy, even if I don't think it can be universal. We can do that. We are smart enough and nuanced enough. We are rational enough to be able to do that. Don't give up your heroes without a fight.
Mm-hmm. And know why you like them. Know why they inspire you. Try to understand that. I mean, meeting your heroes means understanding them better. Of course, like I said, seeing that they are real. But as objectivists, as lovers of philosophy, as lovers of people who like to define things like human character, make sure when you do meet your heroes, make sure that you have you have reasoned out why you like them. Put it into words and be very diligent in understanding why.
I don't know if I'd go as far as Kirk Barbera does to say real heroism requires having gone through some real pain or suffering, but I totally get it. And we've got some suggestions in the chat. For example, Frank's mentioning J.D. Salinger, the author, or Bobby Fischer, the chess player. Yes, some heroes are very complicated, and we need to be not just able but willing to know consciously what we value and why, what we admire and why, what actual, real, reality-based virtues serve our need and desire to see good in the world. You can and you should be able to acknowledge the complexity of real-life heroes without losing their value as role models, as inspiration, as spiritual fuel. It's just like Marianne Surrey's learned with the copper pot story.
It's a great story. If you don't know it, you need to look online, go to Facets of Ayn Rand. Which is all published at ayn rand.org now.
Here, I'll read the short version. It's less than a page, and we've got time. The Ayn Rand Institute was interviewing Marianne Surrey and said, you once spoke of something you called the glorious lunch break. And Marianne answers, this refers to a discussion we had. Remember, Marianne Surrey was working for Ayn Rand at the time, working in her apartment. A discussion we had that had the greatest effect on my life. One day I was depressed because an acquaintance had criticized me for taking pleasure in cleaning a copper-bottomed frying pan. I enjoyed cleaning it, and then seeing it shine on the wall, hanging on a pegboard. It was the only piece of decoration in my kitchen. I was bothered by the criticism that I was finding enjoyment in something so non-intellectual. So I told Ayn Rand that I was troubled by something and asked her if we could have a discussion about it. And she suggested that we do it during lunch. I told her about the incident and she nodded in understanding. When I finished, she said, "Oh, check your premises." I told her I didn't know what premises to check. So she led me to understand the issue by questioning me about my response to the copper pot. And she pointed out that it was significant that I didn't clean it and then put it away, that I hung it up so I could look at it and enjoy its beauty. That, she said, was a rational value and I shouldn't apologize for it. In that discussion, she explored my attitude to housework in general and learned that I didn't mind doing it. And then she led me to understand that I enjoyed the result, a polished and shined appearance to a room, and why that was a value that I shouldn't apologize for. She added that I didn't expect others to accomplish that for me, which was a virtue. And then she said, "Well, do you know what we're doing?" I didn't know what she was getting at, and I said, "Well, we're analyzing the situation." And she said, "What we are doing, Marianne, we are taking ideas seriously. You are applying philosophy to your life. This is what philosophy is for." And she explained the necessity of identifying your values and knowing why they are values, why you shouldn't give up a value because someone questions it, even if you can't fully explain why it is important to you.
Even if you can't fully explain at the time why it's important to you.
Yes.
So yeah, don't give up on your values, even if you're not quite clear about why it is your value.
Including your heroes. Mm-hmm. You know, just as Marianne Suri's learned in the Copper Pot episode, don't ever give up a value to the opinions of others, even if you can't fully justify it to them in words in the moment, so long as you know what you do value.
Yeah.
And why. Because just as we need businessmen and entertainers and soldiers and artists and musicians and athletes, friends, lovers, kindred spirits, we need our heroes, our role models, if we are to achieve a rich and grounded and elevated and successful life on Earth.